Fast Forward is a series from Tomorrow Unlocked by Kaspersky, because your digital life deserves complete protection. When it comes to digital health, securing your data isn't just personal, it's vital. Protect it with the new Kaspersky. Search Kaspersky on your smart speakers or check the show notes for the latest offers with 30-day money-back guarantee. Fast Forward is written and presented by Ghislaine Boddington. Episode 4, Extended Self, Our Future Digital Twins.
There is a future that we think we know already, one that seems as safe as yesterday. It lies somewhere between what we know and what we can imagine, between the limits of today and the possibilities of tomorrow. But this future has a hidden dimension, a mysterious secret area that we like to call the past. It's the year 2030. Your avatar taps you on the shoulder.
Calm down, our heartbeat is going too fast.
You reduce speed.
What a relief. We're overdoing this life logging stuff, you know. Yes, our fitness aim is to slow down our aging, but this is too much.
Says your digital twin. The treadmill shifts gear again, and you move together from the pavement and off the road onto a gentle pathway alongside a stream. The gurgling water calming you down as you slow to a stop and sit on the banks, taking a moment to smell the spring flowers and listen to the birds singing above. Your digital bio-twin is not quite a carbon copy of you, but it is made up of your multiple biosignals, continuously measured, and this unique data is fed real-time into your avatar body. Your heartbeat, your breath, your temperature, even your muscle tension, currently decontracting rapidly as you relax. The realization of a full-body, biometric-linked twin is sometime off, yet it is through connected fitness activities that many investors see a pathway towards our fuller participation in immersive virtual worlds and metaverses. There we will work out together, blending our virtual and physical selves through live biometric interactions alongside our trainers and classmates. After all our exercise, it's time for bed. As you drift off to sleep, your digital bio-twin stays wide awake, as well as keeping you updated on the latest news, weather, and state of your body and mind in the daytime. Your twin continues to silently capture thousands of data points about you. It knows you just brushed your teeth and drank a glass of water, and now, as you drift deeper and deeper into dreamland, it's gathering even more information, adding it to your digital avatar. Century Italian physiologist and physician Sanctorius of Padua was a fitness fanatic. Back then, with no live data feeds available, he constructed a wooden weighing contraption, a chair linked to a series of ropes and pulleys. He tracked his weight versus his daily food intake and body excretions for over 30 years. Ultimately, his expertise fed into many body measuring inventions, but he is most well known for the invention of the thermometer. 400 years later, in our digital era, we have what has become known as the quantified self. That is, self-knowledge through numbers. The first heartbeat trackers came into use in the early 1980s, And nowadays, accelerometers, trackers, monitors and sensors are embedded in our smartphones and watches, into bracelets and rings, into vests, headbands and stick-on patches. We are able to record our blood pressure, respiratory condition, walking and gait patterns, sleep cycles and many other vital life signs. Sanctorius's heart rate would have quickened with the thought of having all his data readily available at his fingertips. But he was on the right path, as today scientists know that our genetics only affect our lifespan by 10 to 25%, and a lot of our aging issues can be ascribed to our daily behaviours. Being able to anticipate, predict, and even prevent many physical, mental, and emotional issues and problems is now the key to extending our lives. And with daily biophysical measuring tools, we can start to give ourselves the choice to take highly personalised approaches to our body data. Michael Gear is the co-founder of Humanity, based in London. This mobile app gathers together our daily movement, nutrition, mind and recovery data.
What drove me to start the app, and me and my co-founder, was we had family members basically get hit by tragic health events. And in my case, it was people close to me finding out way too late about cancer. And in those moments, you figure out that if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. They obviously want to live a long and healthy life, and at that moment, that's taken away from them. And what we wanted to do is find a way to actually bring that choice back to people so that they could live longer. We found out that if you actually look at, say, longitudinal data, which is basically meaning that you're monitoring the same people over decades, you could actually look at what their biomarkers were in the past. And when I say biomarkers, I mean things like blood results, and it could even be digital biomarkers, stuff like your movement patterns, your heart rate. You could look at all that in the past, and then did they have a heart attack in 10 years? Did they get cancer in 12 years? You could actually start to make predictive algorithms, then apply to, say, one of our users' data, so their movement pattern, their heart rate pattern. We could actually predict what our users' future health would be to a certain level of probability. And they could use that information then to make better choices. And that's things like how long they should be sleeping, less, more. Should they be moving more? Should they be doing high intensity exercise? Anything you can think of as a human that you do that might affect your body. And so the user then gets that guidance. Before we had these algorithms, people would do things because they thought it might make them healthy, but they really had no idea whether it would or not. And so the choice was kind of a false one. And so now we're moving towards this future where people actually know what their choices of actions will lead to in the future. And so they can make more informed choice. We had one woman that was using the app. She ended up actually moving house closer to the countryside where she could actually go on hikes, because she saw that that would actually be one of the actions that would start to lower her rate of aging. And so it becomes more real in the user's brain, more so than any of us saying, hey, maybe you should do that stuff to make you healthier. When they actually see it in real terms, a real prediction, that makes quite a difference in people's behavior change.
A cool thing happens when you can observe how things used to be and start to make changes linked to that. You might not know this, but many of our body measurements, such as blood tests and heart rate monitoring outputs, have been collected across the last couple of decades and stored in one of 120 biobanks worldwide. As we continue to add more quantified data, plus our actual health outcomes to those big data sets, the predictive algorithms learn and learn. They will start to feed us individual guidance and choices on how to change our behaviours, how to slow down our ageing. The problem here is that although we may want to fulfil our dreams of longevity, so much of our highly personalised health data is not kept securely by the app makers, but sold to others to make money. Is that really worth the payoff? And are there less intrusive ways to use our biometric data?
What we started to understand is that when you're collecting all this data, what you want to do is you want to train your algorithms on the data. But that data itself never really needs to go anywhere. It can stay completely private and completely owned by the user. The next level of this that we're looking at is, can we actually then take those learnings and actually allow other researchers and other people around the world to learn from them as well? And so that kind of brings in this concept of synthetic data, which is where you're learning all you can the relationships in the real data. So like age, gender, how that affects heart rate, how that affects movement pattern, all these kind of things. You learn all those relationships and then you create, for lack of a better word, fake users. So basically you create all these synthetic users that have those same relationships, but they're no longer the real user data. And so with that synthetic data, we see a really big feature in the ownership and the privacy of the user data stays completely with us. And if the user wants to delete it, they can delete it. And it gets away from this idea of anonymization where, unfortunately, people's data still gets away from them and they no longer have control of it, even if it's been anonymized. When you talk about predicting the future, there's always the dystopian or the utopian. There's Back to the Future 2 or Back to the Future 3, probably dating myself with that reference. If you give enough people choice, the utopian version of the future kind of happens on its own, as in we all lead towards it. If we take away that choice, you have a much greater chance of the future not actually being so great for everybody. If I had a huge belief in humanity and humans, as I do, the bigger risk I would see for a dystopian future is that we make choices that we don't understand the consequences of. And so if we get better and better at predicting the future based on different algorithms and data, I believe that we're going to make the right choices because we'll actually know what they'll lead to.
It is the safety and privacy of our health and well-being data that is one of the concerns putting people off using such advanced health monitoring tools today. So how can we protect ourselves from our biometric data being stolen? Let's go to the safety zone to learn more about the potential misuses of this data, our most personal.
The Safety Zone with David M., Principal Security Researcher at Kaspersky.
It's important that we all think about these devices, be aware of the fact that they're gathering lots and lots of personal information, and also ask yourself the question, do we really know what that information is being used for? Is it being used by the company gathering it? Are they transferring it or selling it to other people who could use it as well? And what options are there for us to opt out or restrict how that information is used? Think, for example, about information about our health could be used to allow us or not allow us insurance, or indeed to affect the premium given to us by an insurance company. We wouldn't be very happy about somebody knocking on our door and asking for our fingerprint or getting a DNA sample, but actually that's what's involved with some of this, is biological markers that could be used by somebody for all kinds of purposes, and it could also be used by criminals if they get access to that. A Kaspersky study showed that many medical devices lack data encryption, and the problem with that is that if that data isn't encrypted, it could then potentially be intercepted by people to do us harm, basically to create, for example, phishing attacks. Personal information is grist to the mill of the cyber criminals. The more somebody knows about us, the more realistic or legitimate looking a piece of phishing is, which we are more likely to respond to, and therefore it gives them an in into our computer or into our bank system and so on. It's one thing to go online and share information with Facebook or Instagram or TikTok. This is information which is being gathered, and we're completely passive. Just by putting the device on, it's capturing information, and we don't necessarily think about where that information is going.
With so much of your life being digital, it's important to stay safe online. For more cybersecurity tips from Kaspersky, check the show notes.
So the idea is that if our future digital bio-twins are able to take full advantage of these synthetic data sets, they will be able to create feedback loops between us and our biometric data, hints and information that will encourage us to action healthier behaviours. But do these big data sets hold the right data in the first place? One issue is that the progression of certain conditions and diseases takes place across many years, and we will need to wait a while for this long-term data to add to the results. But more imperative right now is the lack of diversity of data from people of different cultures, races, genders, and age groups. Maria Butkovich is a world expert in women's health innovation, and based in London, she is the founder of the global network Women in Wearables. Her work keeps her informed about the topical technical developments linked to many areas of women's health and well-being, often now referred to as femtech.
We come to the whole women's health movement at the moment with the notion that it's something that is predominantly focused on reproductive health of women, but women are not just reproductive machines, so we have to think about women's health very holistically. We have to think about data gap and gender data gap in a holistic way, that we really miss data on our bodies throughout the whole lifespan of women, unfortunately. A lot of drugs out there and medical procedures even have been using men through their clinical trials, not women. Even some contraception pills, unfortunately, have been tested on men. And until we get that equality and equity in approach of how much money goes to women's health in terms of funding and research and trials and innovation out there, we won't be equal. One of the key areas of focus, I would say, for many femtech companies at the moment is how do we fill that gender data gap? How do we collect data in real time from female bodies so we can actually get more precise prevention suggestions or more precise diagnostics? We don't have actual solutions when it comes to either prevention or diagnostics today, for example, for ovarian cancer. Most of the ovarian cancer cases today are discovered in a very late stage, precisely because we don't have data that would quantify and qualify how we feel, how our body feels on time, so we can prevent it. So one of the areas I'm very passionate about, and I see a lot of innovation currently happening, is breastfeeding. Breastfeeding is as old as time, as we say, right? But the journey of women through breastfeeding, it can be very hard. I found recently a stat that 92% of women who breastfeed say they have difficulty with it. So it can be emotionally, physically draining. I was misdiagnosed by 3 doctors. And what I realized was that something was really wrong because I had a lump size of a plum in my left breast that wouldn't go away. And all the doctors in my GP practice and A&E were convincing me, oh, just mastitis. And thankfully, I trusted my own gut and I went to a private GP and they diagnosed me with breast abscess. There's a lot of interesting companies now developing wearable breast pumps or even additions to breast pumps, like devices equipped with sensors that can analyze your breast milk in real time, that can predict even mastitis or breast infections. So that's excellent.
These incredible real-time body data innovations are also extending from the home into the doctor's surgery with remote patient monitoring. Telemedicine allows you to have a direct video connection to your doctor for consultations, and some have systems in place that can analyse your data feeds alongside your biomarkers, like blood tests, and compare these to the medical norm. At present, we're seeing numerous releases of apps and wearables which can feed into these remote doctor setups. Implant and sensor patches to help with skin cancer detection, asthma and sweat level indicators, diabetic and chronic pain sensors, anxiety, sleep and heart rate activity, some highly complex. This way, the doctor can give feedback in real time. Of course, the human touch and doctor intuition through physical examination is still important to patients, and best practice is to combine face-to-face with telemedicine. Many of these human-linked technological innovations are emerging from small enterprises all over the world, like Alpha Femtech from Hungary.
They have developed a smart bodysuit that's really equipped with sensors and a heating panel with electrodes and the device. So it's a detachable device that connects to the wearable with the application, and then it sends small pulses to the bodysuit, and you feel light vibrations when you have your period. You can really stimulate your nerves to alleviate period pain. Through the app, you can regulate the heating within the bodysuit. You can regulate the intensity of the vibrations, and that can really help you find patterns of your symptoms during your period, figure out triggers maybe, pinpoint treatments for your cycle, and so on.
New data is being generated from these innovative female-led products and will gradually add to the big data pools. But who else should we be designing these products for?
It's an average person. It's not someone that needs to necessarily be very tech savvy or someone who's using all the latest gadgets. Technological innovation can be very basic. And for certain populations, like people of older generations, we have to think about how accessible and how inclusive is it for them. How accessible or inclusive is it for people with disabilities? So democratization of access, yes, but how do we do it and who do we do it for? Do we provide them enough information so they can make the best informed choice about what are they using and how are they using it? It has to be designed for everyone and for all.
This fascinating extension of the self through the use of personal biometric data is revolutionising healthcare, and it will continue to do so by placing choice in our hands. We can ignore or act on the advice, but it will exist whatever. It will be collated in our digital biotwin and held in what is called the embodied internet, and we will flow together in tandem across both virtual and physical environments. We will visit our doctor's virtual studio for checkups, we will dance at virtual festivals, and play, keep fit, and socialise together, both physically and virtually, simultaneously. Our bio-twin avatar will be tethered to our physical selves. Our virtual companion will literally exist to help us gain a longer life through the use of data from our own unique heartbeat, our unique breath, our mental health information, and our biomarkers such as blood tests. And this will create an intricately woven identity between us and our bio-twin. Maybe we will be able to preserve ourselves and extend our lives onwards, as if we have never aged at all. Across season two, we cover a range of fascinating topics, including the metaverse, women in gaming, the ever-growing prevalence of data in and out of the home, in telegram to telepresence, and the world of cyborgs and embedded technologies in cyborg shifts. We also celebrate the contributions of women in STEM and discuss the need for greater representation in the field. So make sure you're following us on your favourite podcast channel. You can also read more interviews and stories from Fast Forward Season 1 and 2 on tomorrowunlocked.com. We've added a link in the show notes. You have been listening to Fast Forward. This has been a Sounds Fancy production with music by Simon James and Max DeWardner. You also heard the voices of my special guests, Michael Gear, Maria Butkovich, and David M. My name is Ghislaine Boddington, and I have been your writer and presenter.
Artificial intelligence and machine learning. We're all probably across the fact that computer systems and automation are a good thing for business. But do we know enough about how to use them successfully?
Only about 10% of all the companies who are making investments in AI are actually generating returns from these investments. And that's staggering.
And how much do we understand about what AI and machine learning can do and what it can't?
You can't always understand the why in data.
I'm Susie O'Neill, and in the next edition of Insight Story, Tech Trends Unpacked from Kaspersky, the cyber security security experts, we'll be finding out how to integrate this technology into your organisation as successfully as possible.
It's an ultra marathon, it's not a sprint.
And make sure you're getting the returns you want from your investment.
To not look at an AI transformation as a capital expenditure.
Find Insight Story, Tech Trends Unpacked for Business Leaders, wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to get ahead, you can't afford to miss it.